Curry aspires to be an open-hearted and open-minded congregation. We welcome people, regardless of your ethnic or religious background, race, sexual orientation, gender, family structure, abilities or inabilities. And later in the service, we have an option for visitors or guests to introduce yourselves if you wish to. On Sunday mornings, we provide a wide variety of services, and maybe wider than ever now that we're in our temporary quarters. So feel free to come multiple times to see what we're like. Our opening words from Barbara Wells. O spinner, weaver of our lives, your loom is love. May we who are gathered here be empowered by that love to weave new patterns of truth and justice into a web of life that is strong, beautiful, and everlasting. The chalice lighting, I do have a short reading that goes with it, if you will. The hero's quest story tells how a boy becomes a mature man. In the final stages of the quest, the hero meets and marries the princess or goddess. She is his reward and the proof that he is ready to step into the role of king and father. She's important because of the role she plays in the hero's life as a metaphor, a symbol of his own neglected feminine aspects. She's not a person in her own right, and we know almost nothing about her. How did she get there? What journey did she take to become the partner of the hero? Most of us are familiar with the hero's journey that was described by Joseph Campbell over 50 years ago, and I gave a talk about that over a year ago, and I talked about how the same story that we have in ancient heroes like Hercules and Jesus also fits our modern heroes like Luke Skywalker and Harry Potter. I tried to find a female protagonist then. I came up with Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz, but women heroes are few in classical stories. And there are often significant differences. Then I found this fascinating book at Frugal Muse. I've gotten more good ideas shopping at Frugal Muse and Half Price Books. Called Jane Eyre's Sisters, How Women Live and Write the Heroine's Story by a woman named Jody Gentian Bauer. It was published in 2015. Her idea is that the hero's story doesn't apply to most women's lives, either in literature or in the real world. And so most of what I'm going to talk about comes from this book. She chose to scrap the words hero and heroine for most of the book. She used a word aletus, which is Greek for wanderer. She says that while a boy's quest is to become a man, a girl's quest is to escape the boundaries set by being a woman. And there's a couple examples from literature. In Jane Eyre, she seems to be following the typical Cinderella story. She's poor, and she's a governess. She falls in love with the master who's rich. But when she's about to marry him, the secret mad woman in the attic is exposed, and she flees, and she meets some relatives. A serious young missionary proposes to her, because he thinks she'll be a good wife to take to Africa and do all the work. She says no. She chooses independence. When she does return to Rochester, he's been brought low by injury and blindness. So as she has risen, he has sunk in power, and now he needs her. She has left home, wandered, returned, but they'll move on together in a new relationship. In Middlemarch by George Eliot, Dorothea is an idealistic young woman. At a time in the 19th century when women had few options to distinguish themselves, her goal is to assist a great man. She marries the Reverend Casaubon, thinking that she will help him with his work of genius that he's always talking about. It turns out he's a fraud and unworthy of her. He really can't get anything written. She eventually reclaims her independence and learns to value what's important to her. So these two heroines written by women authors contrast with most of the heroines written by male authors. For instance, in Dickens, the heroines are often very self-effacing and totally devoted to their families, very sweet like little Nell. And so they rarely ring true to us as modern readers. There is a trend today in movies, books, and TV to show female protagonists and superheroes such as Wonder Woman or Lara Croft. We have Rey in the new Star Wars movies. But generally, they've been put into the typical hero's journey and succeed with masculine abilities such as fighting, engaging in air battles and so on, while still looking incredibly sexy. But that's not the type of story we're looking at today. So let's review the hero myth, and then we'll see where this wandering elitist myth differs. In the traditional myth, the young boy is often marked in some way as special. He has talents or an unusual appearance. So Harry Potter has a scar and he can talk to snakes. He receives a call to action, often from a mentor like Obi-Wan or Hagrid or John the Baptist. He sets out on a journey or quest. Along the way, he acquires both companions and enemies. He has to fight temptations and pass tests or accomplish feats of strength. He must face his dark side, which can take the form of a descent to the underworld or a struggle with death. He brings wisdom or some kind of gift back to his society. He integrates with his female side, which can be represented by marrying the princess. So there is a whole Jungian analysis of this, saying that really all of these are elements within each of us. But the stories with female heroes don't quite work the same way. For The Wizard of Oz, Dorothy follows the quest story, traveling with her companions, destroying the Wicked Witch. She has to go on a quest and freeing the land. But when she returns, no one believes anything happened. And the message she'd given by the author is, there's no place like home. That seems to be saying that the whole adventure was a waste. While boys need to prove their maleness, girls don't have to prove their femaleness. It is assumed for them whether they want it or not. Many myths and fairy tales have passive heroines such as Sleeping Beauty and Snow White, who need to be awakened and claimed by a man. So what is the journey of the woman, or elitist, and how does it differ from the male hero? So here's a description from this book. The hero is applauded for accomplishing a great task such as killing a monster or bringing fire to his people. The elitist rarely accomplishes anything that others think important. Her bravery lies in refusing to do what is expected of her. The theme of the hero's quest is doing, while the theme of the elitist is being. She seeks the freedom to be herself. The hero is seen as different or isolated in his community. The elitist is immersed in her community to the point of being invisible. The hero must go away to prove his masculinity. The femininity of the elitist is never in doubt. She must go away to defy her femininity. The hero's challenges occur far from home. The elitist undergoes her greatest challenges at home before she leaves. The hero is expected. There are signs or prophecies, or the community knows it needs a hero. He only has to prove he is that hero, like pulling the sword out of a stone. The elitist is unexpected and even goes against the expectations of the community. The heroic quest is to circle back to home. The successful female goes on and eventually finds or creates a new home. The hero's mentor seeks him out and often travels with him. The elitist finds and then leaves her teacher. For instance, she finds an old woman in the woods and learns from her and then moves on. The hero transforms himself and restores or preserves his community. He needs to change to be a whole man. The elitist transforms the community while preserving herself. She shatters old ideas of what it is to be female. She establishes herself as who she really is and brings forth gifts from within herself that transform the community. So let's look at some examples of stories. The elitist as a girl often feels she doesn't fit in. She may be an orphan or have absent, inattentive, or abusive parents. Or her parents just expect her to follow the traditional female path. Rather than being called out on the journey as a boy is, she's pushed out by her unhappiness with expectations, or by her community when she doesn't meet their expectations. So here's a couple examples. Jo March, just like her author Louisa May Alcott, finds boys' activities, clothing, and careers more attractive than those she was expected to follow as a girl. She resists the expectation of early marriage, even to the charming boy next door, and indeed she resists any marriage, she intends to support herself by her creative writing. Alcott did not intend for her character Jo to marry, but when young fans insisted on a marriage, she gave her what she called a ridiculous lover, which was the older Mr. Bear. Actually, Mr. Bear is a good match for Jo in that he's intellectual and values her intelligence. He supports her writing, and he doesn't expect her to be the little woman at home. In another example, Elizabeth Bennet, in Pride and Prejudice, rejects her ridiculous suitor, Mr. Elton, despite her mother's wishes. She also rejects Mr. Darcy's first proposal because she isn't convinced of his love and sincerity and respect. Dorothea Brooke in Middlemarch and Margaret Hale in North and South are young women with social consciences. They try to help the poor in their towns, only to be dismissed and reminded of their female duties. In The Awakening by Kate Chopin, a married woman dares to free herself by meeting with a lover, but finally realizing she won't be able to sustain that freedom, she drowns herself. This is the Thelma and Louise ending, where there's no place in the world for free women. Maybe Anna Karenina has that story too. Just as there's rarely a powerful father for the boy to learn from, he's often an orphan and has to find a mentor somewhere else, the girl rarely has a strong mother figure. The mother might be absent or ineffectual. Mrs. Bennet in Pride and Prejudice is silly and even endangers the health and reputations of her daughters in her quest to marry them off. Or there's the evil stepmother who pushes the daughter out. The girl often has a sister or close friend who is her real confidant and partner. Jo March has Meg. Jane Eyre has her friend Helen. And if you remember the old movie, she was played by dazzling young Elizabeth Taylor, her friend Helen, who dies. Celie in The Color Purple has her sister Nettie. On the other side is the mean girl. This is something we hear about in the 21st century, but we find it throughout time in stories. In the hero myth, the boy finds companions who say they are friends but turn against him, for instance, Harry Potter and Draco Malfoy. In Pride and Prejudice, the mean girl is Caroline Bingley, a rival for Mr. Darcy's attention and an open despiser of Elizabeth Bennet's whole family. In Jane Eyre, this role is held by Blanche Ingram, who's angling for Mr. Rochester. We even see this triangle in The Sound of Music, where the Countess is the foil to the governess Maria. She's trying to capture the captain. The mean girl looks like what society wants in a woman. She's always beautiful, well-dressed, well-mannered, and she cloaks her ambition. She acts nice. The elitist can overcome the mean girl in two ways. Sometimes she actually wins over the mean girl as an ally, or she can just make her look ridiculous by refusing to play her games. And then there's the category of frenemy, which is someone who is sometimes your greatest support and also undermines you. And we see this over and over in the Neapolitan novels of Elena Ferrante, My Brilliant Friend, and the ensuing novels. While she's at home, the girl is expected to engage in menial tasks, cleaning, cooking, tending animals, so on. Cinderella is an extreme example of this. Or she's to be decorative, with an education in drawing, music, and French in order to charm a husband. In marriage, her tasks are domestic. Even if she's not the one doing the cleaning and cooking, she's responsible for that accomplishment. The moment when the elitist leaves home may not be so much a physical journey as a rejection of the path destined for her. The husband chosen by her family, or the role of taking care of her parents. George Eliot, under her original name of Marianne Evans, started out as a religious believer. But then she read historical accounts of the Bible, always a dangerous idea. She began to question the truth she had accepted. One day she refused to accompany her father to church. He threatened to throw her out of the family. They reached a compromise that she would go to church, but keep her own opinions on religion, and she could stay at home, and by the way, continue to take care of her father, so it worked out for him. In her life, Marianne published under the male name of George Eliot. She lived out of wedlock with a man for many years. Her own life undoubtedly influenced the creation of some of her characters, like Dorothea in Middlemarch. There's another character, Dinah, in the book Adam Bede, who insists on her right as a woman to preach in church. It's not surprising that religion is one area where a woman rebels. considering the common church teachings on the sin of women, the lack of women clergy, especially at this time in the 19th century, and the use of the Bible to justify domination of men over women. Religion is a prime support of the status quo and the traditional role of women. There was a film a few years ago that I saw at the film festival about Emily Dickinson. She was thrown out of school for refusing to worship in the prescribed way. She later wrote in a poem, "Some keep the Sabbath by going to church. I keep it staying at home." Leaving home is more dangerous for the elitist than for her male counterpart. She often resorts to disguise, dressing very plainly or dressing as a boy. She goes out into the wilderness or the forest, which in the metaphorical sense represents the untamed parts of herself. There she meets a witch, a goddess, a woman with power, who is not immediately welcoming and supportive the way the boy's mentor usually is. The elitist must stand up to this figure. We have a scene like this in Little Women and Pride and Prejudice, where there's a heroine, Meg in Little Women or Elizabeth in Pride and Prejudice, confronting an ill-tempered elderly lady, that's Aunt March or Lady Catherine, in defense of her right to love and marry as she chooses. And we get the sense that these witch figures, although nasty at the time, have a grudging respect for a young woman who can stand up to them. In a fairy tale setting, the witch often gives the girl a task of discrimination, for instance, separating different kinds of seeds into piles. This is a symbol of the elitist learning to sort out her own feelings and desires from all that have been placed upon her by society. In fairy tale and myth, often a magic helper appears at night to do the work for her. This symbolizes her unconscious that can do the work when her conscious mind is asleep. That is, her true desires and talents are slumbering within her. Because the task of the woman is to be herself, there's no clear journey toward an end or return home. As a free woman, she no longer fits into her old society. She learns to speak up, even at the risk of disturbing others. Ironically, once the elitist has declared her independence and freedom, without the need for a father, husband, or lover, she is able to perceive and accept the true lover, one who accepts her. Earlier in her story, she rejected suitors who wanted to keep her in the accustomed role. The true lover appreciates her and supports her as she is. He may leave home and journey to a new place with her or set up a new kind of life with her. So in Middlemarch, Dorothea later marries Will Ladislaw. It's a very different type of man. Finally, the heroine gives her gifts to society. These are often depicted in the arts, such as weaving, sewing, or sculpture, or in teaching and training others. She also teaches by example, in a way becoming the wise woman for the next wandering girl. And I was going to read something from near the end of this book, where so we talked about how in the hero quest story, he gains the princess or the goddess, but we don't know her story. Yet, the heroine's story has always been before our eyes. When we look at the tales women themselves tell, the stories women have always told, her story is there. Her story is convoluted, spiraling in and out of the forest, away from home, and on to new households. The story is not linear, nor does it always follow the same series of events. A particular character or motif may appear early in one woman's childhood, but not until later life in another. Because the heroine's main task is to define herself regardless of what attitude society may hold about women, the challenges she faces are different in every era. There is no one victory, no single achievement that makes a heroine. Her challenges morph each time she overcomes them and take a new shape to challenge her again. Her biggest test is not courage or physical strength, but resolve, the capacity to keep on fighting for the right to be herself, to be a unique and special individual. The woman who can keep on fighting wins the prize, and it is not a husband or a throne. You might say she persisted. What she wins is not just an unshakable sense of herself, but the capacity, regardless of what others would have her be and do, regardless of the situation in which she finds herself, to live as she wills. She becomes the queen of her own life. Now, just a reminder, this is not to say that any one story is a perfect fit for any person, male or female. Just as Joseph Campbell's hero story can be a paradigm for life, so this journey of the female wanderer can be a paradigm or a symbol. For women who grew up in the middle of the 20th century, second wave feminism often took them on a journey into new worlds. I'm thinking of the character Joni from Doonesbury, who was a housewife, went through a consciousness-raising time, left her husband, applied to law school, where she at first received many rejections, and finally went into politics. Toward the end of the book, Bauer speculates on how the story can change as our culture changes. And Joseph Campbell saw that within his greater framework, there are variations based on culture. For instance, in the Western world, the symbol of the snake or serpent has a negative connotation from the Garden of Eden. In other parts of the world, the snake is a positive symbol of renewal because it can shed its skin for a new one. In the same way, as our society offers more choices for both men and women, the myths, whether in storytelling or popular movies, can morph into something more fluid. So last year we saw a culture shift in the U.S. Senate where the rules were changed to allow Tammy Duckworth, then a new mother, to bring her infant onto the floor while voting. Some male senators wondered why Duckworth couldn't just stay in the nearby cloakroom. And also, what if we have 10 infants in here someday? To that last question, many of us would answer, hallelujah. We'd probably get a lot better legislation passed a lot faster. Now, there's a whole other angle. Not everyone accepts the clear-cut categories of male and female. Especially among our younger people, gender is fluid and undetermined. So these young people will have their own journey as a wanderer or pioneer. What happens when you can choose your own story? Now, just like Joseph Campbell did in his book, Bauer in this book intersperses some tales and myths. And I'll conclude with one from the King Arthur cycle, which I don't remember ever hearing before. It's about Gawain and Ragnall. Once upon a time, King Arthur found himself in a quandary. Unless he could answer the question, what do women want? He would have to let a fearsome giant chop off his head. Arthur had no idea how to answer this question, and neither did the men in his court. Gawain, first and best of the knights, suggested that Arthur ask the old wise women of the villages for the answer. After many months, Arthur came across Ragnall, the ugliest woman he'd ever seen. I know the answer, she told the king, but my price is this. You must marry me to Gawain. Desperate, Arthur agreed. Women want sovereignty, Ragnall told him. They want to determine their own lives. This was the right answer, and the giant let Arthur live. Arthur returned to Camelot with the hideous woman. The court was horrified, but Gawain said that the king's promise must be honored, and he married her. In their bedroom, Ragnall told Gawain to kiss her. He did, and she turned into a beautiful maiden. Now you must choose, she said. I can be lovely at night when we are alone, or by day when others can see me. I can't decide that, replied Gawain. It must be your choice. Ragnall smiled and said, because you gave me sovereignty, I will be beautiful both day and night. Gawain, the knight of the goddess, understands that all women require sovereignty. And just like with Joseph Campbell, this is not the truth, but these are just some models and stories that may bring up some incidents from our own lives or others that we know. Called Jane Eyre's Sisters, How Women Live and Write the Heroine's Story, Jodie G. Bauer, B-O-W-E-R. It's actually funny. I found the one I found in Half Price Books, as I was paging through, there was a whole section of it that was totally blank. Like one section wasn't printed right. So when I showed that to them, I said, oh, well, you can just take this book away. So then I had to, the only place I was able to find this really was Amazon, but it may be possible to be ordered through one of the other bookstores. One of the first things in fundamentalist society is to have rules for what women can and can't do and how they can dress, and certainly not allowing women to get education. I've noticed, for instance, on PBS NewsHour or other places where experts are called in, the expert can is often women, which wasn't the case. Well, and in when I was young, they said, oh, only the main news anchormen had to be men because only men had authoritative voices.
All the news announcers were men.
Yeah, and I haven't figured out this whole thing about why all the assistants are female, like Siri and Alexa and so on. That somehow that's okay because they're, even though they're telling you where to turn, they're somehow your servants, and so that's okay. You can change it. You can change it. Yes. In some of the modern romances, the great thing is not that the hero rescues the heroine. She's the one that has to save him from whatever sometimes, and I always thought the myth in a lot of romances is not that the man rescues you. It's the man is finally strong enough to stand up to you and be worth it. So yeah, that's why some girls have really valued going to girls' high schools or colleges, because all the leadership positions have to be held by women. Well, that seems very fitting for the celebration we just had downtown last weekend for the 100th anniversary of Wisconsin becoming the first state to ratify the 19th Amendment.
Right? It's a mouthful.
And our closing words are from a Buddhist tradition. Be ye lamps unto yourselves, be your own confidence, hold to the truth within yourselves as to the only lamp. And now greet your neighbor, join us for some coffee or cold drinks.